This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Like so slow, take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Good evening, this is Jamie Partridge, your host for Labor Radio tonight, and my co-host is John Walsh. And we have a special hour-long Labor Radio show for you tonight. Two guests, the first, Adam Sanchez, who's a high school teacher and a member of the Social Equality Educators. And our second, the second half of the show is an interview with Wendy Thompson of the United Auto Workers. We'll have a phone interview with her from Detroit. So let's get right into it with Adam. Good evening, Adam.
Good evening, Jamie.
Thanks for being here. All right. Adam's a social studies teacher at Madison High School, a union rep with the Portland Association of Teachers. And you're on the organizing committee, or you're the chair of the organizing committee or something.
I'm the cluster organizer for the Madison cluster.
Gotcha. Okay. And a founder and activist in Social Equality Educators. Tonight, we're going to talk about the major issues facing teachers, especially the corporate education reform agenda. So tell us, Adam, give us kind of a broad strokes. What is this corporate education reform agenda that's facing teachers right now?
Well, I think it's really nothing less than the wholesale destruction of public education as we know it. I think in order to understand the agenda, you have to understand who's behind it, which is, you know, in every sense of the word, the 1%, right? The Bill Gates through the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Eli Broad, the real estate magnate from LA, who has started the Broad Superintendents Academy, which exports superintendents with corporate minded reform to all over the country, and the Walton Family Foundation, which is a huge pusher of the corporate agenda. And of course, it's not limited to those people. If you look at the Department of Education, those foundations have exported people to the Department of Education. And of course, it goes to the very top as well. Arne Duncan, the Secretary of Education, made a name for himself in Chicago, closing 10 public schools a year, reopening them as charter schools. Even before that, he was the head of a school for aerial capital management, where they said on their brochure that they want the stock market to be, dinner table conversation. They would give their first graders $10,000 to invest in the stock market, which they had to, you know, pay back at the pay half back or pay the $10,000 back and keep the profits at when they graduated. So this is the kind of mindset of education that is at the very top of the Obama administration. And so what is the agenda? I mean, I think it's really the idea that we have an over-educated populace in the eyes of the economy. That is that about half of college graduates today are either unemployed or underemployed, that most of the jobs that are being created in the so-called recovery are minimum wage jobs. And so what that means is that we need to actually start rationing education to the 99%, of course not for the 1%. And so what that means is creating two-tiered systems where you have these charter schools that are getting public money but are run by private entities that hedge fund managers can make billions off of, but that are also able to cream the crop from the public schools. While the public schools are basically left to languish with, you know, huge class sizes, dwindling resources. It's also about tying teacher evaluation, student graduation to test scores. Testing is a way to kind of quantify students and rank students into abilities.
You're talking about what they call high-stakes standardized testing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, not the kind of testing you do every day that you create for your students in the classroom.
Exactly. Exactly. Those assessments are ongoing. They're used as a way not to punish students, not as a way to punish teachers, but as a way to inform instruction. High-stakes testing, on the other hand, in Oregon, you have to pass a high-stakes test to graduate high school. Teacher or school funding is tied to high-stakes testing like it is across the country because of No Child Left Behind. And then if you get low test scores, then the federal government comes in and closes your school. When we all know that standardized tests tell more about a student's zip code than they do about how well of a student they are.
So you're basically saying that the standardized tests show us what the income of the parents is, more than it tells you anything about the teaching or the student.
Yeah, and that's not just my opinion. That's what the research actually shows.
And so these standardized tests are used to evaluate teachers, evaluate schools, close schools, open charter schools. What else is going on there?
Well, and of course, this agenda is highly unpopular. So along with these proposals, you see an erosion of the democracy in our schools. So increasingly, you have mayoral control over schools. In Oregon, we have a new CEO that has replaced our elected superintendent of Oregon schools. So you have increasing centralization and control over the schools in order to push forward these agenda.
We're going to take a break here and head out to Pledge Central.
Here we are at Membership Central. I am Bill. I am with
Jill.
And we are going to tell you everything you need to know about making yourself and us happy. And that starts with calling 877-500-5266 from anywhere in North America to pledge and to become a member and to make our volunteers happy and to become part of the KBOO community.
You can also always stop down and visit us here at KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th here in Portland, Oregon. And you probably also know you can donate online at kboo.fm.
And those are the places to do it. And the ways to do it are many and varied and all wonderful. We like to encourage people to give by the month, the electronic funds transfer, because obviously it's not as big a hit. It's so much easier to do, say, $10 a month, which is $120, than it is to do $120 up front. Or the one that I like is what I call the working class donation, where you take whatever your hourly wage is and give 1 hour's wage to us every month. And it makes it easy for you because an hour's worth of work wage is not so difficult mostly. And, of course, we get a steady income.
And in addition to that, for those of you that maybe are not into the electronic funds transfer, we also still welcome checks and other forms. So, again, you can always come down here or simply pledge over the phone, again, to 877-500-5266, and we will accept really any donation that you can afford.
A bucket of pennies, even. Not our favorite, but come on, it's money. And we are more than delighted for people to help us help themselves, because when you contribute to KBOO, you are indeed helping yourself. You are building the community that is KBOO, because we're working and have worked with underserved populations and the folks you don't hear normally on the air. So give us a call at 877-500-5266. Give us $5, give us that bucket of pennies, give us $10 a month, any way you can do it. And when we come back and have a little more time, we will tell you about all the incredible gifts we will give you. Isn't that true, Jamie?
Gifts galore. That's right.
Yes.
Jamie Partridge here with Labor Radio, talking to Adam Sanchez of the Portland Association of Teachers and Social Equality Educators. So we've been talking about the school reform, corporate education deform agenda. How does this impact other public sector workers or the larger working class movement? Adam, tell us about that.
Well, I think we have to see the movement to deform education, as you said, in the context of the larger bipartisan austerity drive. That is that both parties want to get out of this recession on the backs of working people. And this isn't just happening in the United States. It's happening all over the world. And in order to do that, they need to break unions. And in this country, public sector unions are by far the largest sector of unions. In fact, teachers are the biggest sector, the largest single sector of unionized workers in the country. I think it's something like 3 out of every 5 union members is a teacher in the NEA or AFT. The larger attacks that we're seeing on the working class have to be seen in conjunction as the attack with the attacks on teachers and their unions. But I think also it's important to state the role of education in society. That is that part of the corporate education reform agenda is to say that education is totally separate from the economy, right? And that you can, if you work hard and if you, educate yourself enough, that you can lift yourself out of poverty, right? Whereas, as the figures I stated earlier about, college graduates, what the new jobs are, I think really put to lie that myth. And so part of this focus on education that Obama and, both parties are pushing is about, we are going to fix education without actually touching the economy. And in fact, if anything, we're going to throw more money at the banks, more money at Wall Street, while we let workers suffer. So I think to combat that, we have to say that actually in order to fix education, we have to fix poverty. We have to fix the economy. We have to provide living wage jobs, union jobs for people.
Uh-huh. So there's some pretty exciting fight back going on across the country, and particularly in Chicago and Seattle and here in Portland, against standardized testing, against these school closures and charter schools, and against evaluation of teachers by test scores, and of course against racism in our schools, which is also tied up into this corporate agenda. So tell us something about these fights, and especially how they're playing out in Portland, Adam Sanchez.
So, and I could go on for a long time about each of these, but I think, probably the two most important to highlight are the new opt-out campaign that the Portland Student Union and the PPS Student Union have started, which I think is a huge, important development in the struggle coming right after Seattle. The Garfield High School decided to boycott the MAP standardized test that was tied to teacher evaluations. Now, here in Portland, you have students saying that they're going to boycott the standardized test, the Oaks test here, which I think is a huge step forward for the movement against standardized testing. Maybe even more significant than that was the recent, victory against school closures, where you had the school district come out with a plan to close, two options that would basically close different schools in the Jefferson cluster. We all know Jefferson High School is Oregon's only majority black high school. And so, there's racism embedded into that plan. The Jefferson cluster has seen more school closures in the last 10 years than any other cluster in Portland combined. What happened was parents, students, teachers got out and said no. They went out to the school board meetings. They stood up and said, and had rallies outside of the meetings, and through protests were able to get the school board and the superintendent to back down on closing these schools.
So you mentioned a student group, the Portland Student Union. And I know that the big rally against school closures was organized by Social Equality Educators, which is a group that you helped found. What is Social Equality Educators?
So Social Equality Educators is a group that actually started in Seattle, but then about a year ago, we started a Portland chapter here. And it was a group that was modeled after the Caucus of Rank and File Educators in Chicago, which is widely known for now winning the election in Chicago and then leading the union and the 30,000 teachers in Chicago on one of the most brilliant labor strikes we've seen in decades. And so Social Equality Educators was a group that modeled itself after that. And our goal is to take on the corporate reform agenda, to partner with parents and students to do that, but also to use our union's power to do that. And so in doing that, transform our union from the service model that way too many unions operate off today to an organizing model, a social justice model, and through the union, build a movement that can take on the really dire fight and vast attacks that teachers are facing today.
So recently, the Social Equality Educators ran a slate for the union election at Portland Association of Teachers and won a number of seats, a number of positions. And you hope to implement some of these goals and plans. How can our listeners support or get involved with this struggle, either connect with Social Equality Educators or some of the other groups that are doing this kind of organizing?
Yeah, there's a lot of great groups that are organizing around education today. I mean, I think the first thing, if you're a teacher, please get involved with Social Equality Educators and help us try and transform this union. I don't think any of us have, an idea that we can really reform it from the top.
How do we get in touch with Social Equality Educators?
Gotcha. So our next meeting is at the PAT Union Hall on April 28th at 4 p.m. So we'd love to have you there.
Have you got a website or a Facebook page or something?
We've got a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/PortlandC, I believe.
Okay. Thank you. We're out of time with Adam Sanchez from Social Equality Educators. Thank you, Adam. And I see my brother Bill Mitchum over there on the other side of the glass.
That would be me.
That would be
yes,
you.
Yes, that yeah, would Bill. Be me. And thank you very much, Jamie and Adam, for that information. That's really important. And speaking of important information, let me give you the most important information for you now, which is 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm or 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. These are all ways for you to give money, locations in a sense, for you to give money to us. We need to raise $300 during Labor Radio, and that is where you all come in. And to guide you along, I am going to go to Jill.
Wonderful. Thanks, Bill. And I don't know if we do this anymore, but I was going to kind of give a shout out to educators out there, teachers who are unionized, school psychologists, other people that work in the schools, to encourage you to donate at this time to kind of support this social equality mission that Jamie and Adam were talking about during this key time in U.S. in Portland history. I also am going to give a shout out to today's food donors and those businesses that we could not survive without the community include Junior's Cafe at 1742 Southeast 12th Avenue, the Laurelhurst Market at 3155 East Burnside, and Funky Puffs at 1313 Northeast Alberta Street here in Portland.
Thank you. Yes, they are wonderful, and I'm hoping that soon we will be seeing something from them Funky Puffs, because I'm hungry. Anyway, 877-500-5266. Once again, 877-500-5266. That's where you call and talk to one of our lovely volunteers. And some of the things that you can do with your copious funds is give, say, a $90 minimum donation and get what we refer to as that shirt, which is actually something I just did. I love it. It says on the front, KABU, not just for, ... And on the back, commie, pinko freaks, self-righteous gutter punks, drug-addled peaceniks, anarchist syndicalists, hippie tree huggers, gay hillbillies, militant vegans, or vegans, depending, geriatric deadheads, that's J-E-R-R-Y, or the Foil Hat Brigade anymore. Listen online at kboo.fm. Yes, it's for everybody, KABU.
And one thing that happens when you become a member of KABU is you become a stakeholder in KABU. So you listen, you join, and you vote. And currently, as we speak, the board meeting is happening nearby. So that was something that, as a member, you would be eligible to come and participate. So we want to encourage people listening, and we know there are always many more listening than how many do donate. So I want to encourage you, first-time donors, donors in the Portland metro area, but also in many outlying areas, to donate, to call us up tonight at 877-500-5266. And again, you can always donate online at kboo.fm. And if you want to take the drive, if you're nearby, you can catch the TriMet or various walk down here, ride your bike. You can make it to 20 Southeast 8th here in Portland, Oregon.
And come and see us. See the actual human beings behind the voices. See the control room. See, the place where the phones are being answered. See the studio where Jamie sits and interviews people. This is all part of, we even have offices. This is so official. And see the t-shirts. We have another one of my favorites, which I actually haven't gotten yet, but it's called the Boo Air t-shirt. And it shows the graphics from the front of our building and our homepage, which I just love. And that's a $60 minimum donation, or the Democracy Now! T-shirt, which is $120 minimum donation. There are a variety of T-shirts. There are things like records and services and all kinds of things that we want to give you because you are becoming part of our community or continuing to be part of our community.
That's true. We definitely want to thank the ongoing Electric Fund Transfer members, who are people that are already members. So you're welcome also to call up. You can also get, if you're looking for something to get besides our What's on the Air, is a one-year subscription to Yes Magazine for a $60 minimum donation.
Last phone number, 877-500-5266.
And this is Jamie Partridge again. We have another gift to offer, which is a free registration to the Portland Troublemakers School, which is happening happening Saturday, April 13th from 9 to 5 at the IBEW Hall on 160th and Northeast Airport Way. What the Portland Troublemaker School is a fabulous skill building and strategy training session on everything from beating apathy to building rank and file democracy in your union, to labor community solidarity and fighting austerity and building contract campaigns that win. It's bringing in speakers from the Chicago Teachers Union, who's going to talk about the fighting the corporate education agenda. Mark Brenner, the director of Labor Notes. Joe Burns, the author of the book Reviving the Strike. And Stephanie Luce, who's a community organizer specialist. So if you're the first two callers with a minimum $60 pledge, you'll get a free registration to the Portland Troublemakers School on Saturday, April 13th.
Thank you, Jamie. This is John Walsh. That was Jamie Partridge co-hosting tonight, are the two of us. Our next guest is calling in from Michigan. This is Wendy Thompson, who's the retired president of United Auto Workers Local 235, which was at American Axle in Detroit. If you've kept up with labor in the past decade, you know that name. That's going to talk to you some. She's currently a member of UAW Local 22 and an activist with Auto Worker Caravan. Welcome to Labor Radio, Wendy.
Well, thank you, John.
And tonight we wanted to talk about an issue that involves management desires regarding work schedules, about worker fight back, and about retaliation against people who stand up. Can you kind of sketch out the major features of the situation for us?
Sure. Well, I'm first of all, let me say I'm glad that and interested that you're having a troublemaker school out there, because we have had them in Detroit, and we are all firm troublemakers in our union, which is something that the company is unhappy with, because what it has led to in the situation that I'm going to talk about tonight is a particular local union which has been organizing its members so that they have been fighting back, and the latest struggle is on the question of alternative work schedules. Now, this has been a concept that's been around for a long time, and people may have heard about it in terms of the 10-hour day, the four-day week. Isn't it great to just work 4 days? Well, the 10 hours is at straight time, and so that eliminates the concept of being able to be paid overtime after 8 hours, which is really what they're after, breaking down that concept. And in this last contract, which this local union voted against, they put in there now that you don't get overtime after 8 hours, you only get overtime after 40 hours. And previously, they had been, like, for instance, if you had to work on Saturday, they still would pay you time and a half. Now that is not the case. So the first shift is, you know, the best shift. That's day shift. You have to work 10 hours. You get tired, but you're working Monday through Thursday. The second shift is a horrible shift because it is the second shift on the afternoons, and you work every Saturday, Tuesday through Saturday, and Saturday at straight time. The third shift is one where you're working every week, 2 days on the day shift, and 2 days on the afternoon shift. In my mind, I don't know how people's bodies would be able to adjust to that. So this is a struggle that this local union is having: petitions, going to union meetings. We had a information picket line out in front of the plant, and one of the leaders was fired for this. So that is a complete and total outrage.
Now, we should tell people the company in question here is Chrysler, right? And
it is Chrysler.
And the plant's
That's
the born.
Right. You know, it's making good money lately, but that hasn't stopped them from wanting to get more from their workforce. This is cheaper for them to do this. They said, the workforce says that if it seemed like they weren't going to be able to get out the product, then they needed the shift for that. That would be one thing. But it doesn't, they say their production, there isn't a need to increase production. So they just think that it's a way of establishing that the company wants the say of how production is run. And they don't really want the workers to have a say.
What did the company give as a pretext for firing the brother who they retaliated against?
This the shop rule that they fired him under, nobody's heard of anybody being fired for this before. It says, engaging in, participating in, aiding and approving conduct, constituting or appearing to constitute a conflict with the interests of the company.
Sounds pretty much like what a union does, huh?
Well, you know, like, since we as a union feel that our interests are not the same interests as the company, yes. I mean, you know, we've been saying this for years now. To have that in the shop rule and say that you can get fired for that means pretty much that you could be fired for participating in union activity, which is against the law, or at least it's supposed to be. So Alex Wassel is the name of the employee that got fired. He's written quite a bit for Labor Notes. He's worked for the auto industry a total of 40 years. He is unable to retire quite yet, though, because he lost his job at General Motors and had to switch over to Chrysler, so that he has 20 years at Chrysler now. But very experienced person, and obviously very effective, and it's clear that what the company really wanted to do was to stop these kinds of rallies from occurring in any kind of organization on the part of the rank and file around their interests.
Has anyone actually been fired under this language before that we know about? Is there a way to tell if this will stick? I mean, can they actually make that stand up, given how outrageous the language is?
I don't see how it could possibly stand up. I myself was fired 3 times for what constituted union activity, and that is illegal, and I got back each time with full back pay. And I don't see why the same wouldn't happen with Alex now, because this is obviously what he was fired for, engaging in union activity.
Are there things that people, are there things our listeners can do that would help make that happen? Are there ways to try and put some pressure on Chrysler that might make them respond more readily than they seem to be so far?
Yes. Callers can call the company and they can call the union. I should have had those numbers up here in front of me for this call, but perhaps you could put them up on the on your website.
We can do that, and we can put that up when the audio is up as an archive, so you'll be able to read it then and there. So I'll track those down, or you can send them
great.
To me. Right. So people could call and support.
Look that up.
Right.
Chrysler Management and the United Automobile Workers Solidarity House in Detroit.
Now, the man you're talking about here has obviously lots of experience and has probably seen people like yourself be fired and come back, so he's probably got more of a realistic set of expectations and a sense of what you can do with some confidence than some of the newer people might, less experienced folks might. So if you're a newer person in a shop and you see somebody else get fired, that's bound to have a pretty chilling effect on you, huh?
I absolutely believe that that is why he was fired, and that it is not that they think that it will hold up, but they just wanted to send a message that we're going to put you through a lot of hardship if you engage in this kind of activity. And they wanted to institute this policy. So, yes, I mean, it's true that no more rallies are planned at the moment, but they certainly have riled up the workforce, and they are very angry at what happened, Alex. And it wasn't anything that we expected because it's so outrageous. But, you know, these days it seems like it's just one more outrageous thing after another as they become more aggressive and feel they can do whatever they want to.
Well, sometimes the boss is the best organizer. Maybe that'll be the case this time as well.
I think so. And it shows, too, that once you do provide ideas for how to fight back and you organize with your fellow workers, it can make a difference. There are people from Auto Workers Caravan who are active in this local, more than just Alex, and just having a handful of people, they have been able to get people to sign petitions, come to union meetings and fight to pass motions. And this local stands out in a way that other locals are not standing out, that don't have leaders and rank-and-file people who are encouraging their fellow workers to pursue a fight-back strategy.
And the local
they
we're
really
talking about, this is UAW 869. Is that the local that that we're talking about?
Yes,
here?
It is.
Okay. So it's
Chrysler local. And Chrysler's doing well now after they came back from bankruptcy. And that has created a feeling on the part of the people that there was not equality of sacrifice. Half the workforce is being paid a lower wage, half the wage of the high seniority workers. And this was a concession that was instituted in the last contract, which creates a lot of division. And the work is hard, and so to be paid now $14 an hour for hard, difficult labor is something that, you know, it's unfair to have people working next to each other, and some are making 26 and some are making 14.
For people doing the same job.
And they're doing the same job. That's right. And this is the two-tier wage that they're trying to really institute in all workplaces so that they can get away permanently later on down the line with having a completely low-wage workforce. That's their goal.
And as you say, in the near term, it divides us. You have one worker pitted against another because of the difference in their wages.
That's right, and the lower wage can never get to the higher wage. It's not like eventually they will get there. So that it's a permanent division in the workforce. And it's been working in a lot of locations. But for here, for the workforce to join together around issues of concern, they've been able to overcome that. And plus, the higher seniority workers have made it clear that they do not support the two-tier situation. And when that happens, it gives confidence to the lower seniority workers that it is possible to get everybody to unite together.
To be clear, the two-tier applies across the entire company. It's not just the one plan?
That's right. It's in the national contract.
Okay, so that way the workers in one plant can stand up and take a different position and have it be obvious that they have a different position than what would happen, you know, what happened in the national context.
That's right. This local union voted the contract down, but it passed nationally. Now, on that question of voting on a contract, by the way, Alex also was a leader in another struggle that occurred, and it was a national struggle where In the UAW Constitution, the skilled trades have the right to vote separately on issues that just affect them on the contract. So this last contract, the skilled trades voted the contract down. And by the UAW Constitution, that means that the contract was not to go into effect until there were meetings with the skilled tradesmen. They were found out why they voted it down, and they went back and made changes for the skilled trades.
We're going to have to take Wendy, we're going to have to pause for a moment. We're talking about keeping labor's voice strong. We're going to have to talk for a moment about how to keep the community radio voice strong. So we're going to take a brief break here. We'll be right back with you shortly.
And it is Bill and Jill. And I wanted to say we have so far one donation, which Jill will tell you more about. But I'm thinking it's probably because Labor Radio is so interesting and this is such important stuff that you have just forgotten to call in. So let me remind you, call in 877-500-5266. We need the money. We want to get up to $300 at least. And we can only do that with you calling in, Jill.
And I want to give a shout out and some gratitude to Lynn in North Portland, who is an ongoing troublemaker. So she did call in and claim one of the troublemaker school gifts that we mentioned. So again, for a $6 pledge, $60 pledge, I don't know what I just said, you too can join Lynn as a troublemaker here in Portland. So again, that school is happening on Saturday, April 13th, and from 9 to 5, and for simply $5 a month, calling in to 877-500-5266, you too can join Lynn as a Portland troublemaker.
Yes, and there are so many other things that you can get by giving to us, because we will then turn around and give you a gift if you want. We have, of course, the T-shirts. I've mentioned three of them. And another one of my favorites is the Hound Dog Taylor T-shirt from 1971, of which I have an original. This is a redo, so to speak. The graphic is exactly the same, the color blue and white, but it has spiffy sleeves. And it's a great, great drawing of Hound Dog Taylor playing guitar. And that is available for a mere $60 minimum donation, like $5 a month, 877-500-5266 is how you get it, or kboo.fm. And at the top of the screen on the right is a tip jar with a green dollar sign, I think, and something it says donate today or something like that. You'll see it, I promise you. And then there is beautiful 20 Southeast 8th Avenue where you can come just strolling on in and give us money.
That sounds great, Bill. And if you're curious about 60% of all membership donations are from individual giving to KBOO. So again, you yourself can join if you're not already a member, and you can do that by calling 877-500-5266.
We're here talking to Wendy Thompson, who's a United Auto Worker member and activist. And Wendy, we were just talking about the skilled trades vote on their last contract, and you're partway through telling us about how Alex Wassel was involved in that activity.
Great. And this break, however, gave me a chance to get those telephone numbers, so let me give them before I continue with that struggle.
Good.
Chrysler's phone number is 1-800-334-9200. And UAW Solidarity House is 313-926-5000.
Okay.
Alex has a perfect record after 40 years. This was an information picket line on his own time, which is specifically covered under the National Labor Relations Board as a legal right. This struggle that I was referring to concerns the right of workers to vote on the contract, and the fact that the skilled trades have a right to vote on issues just of concern to them, and the contract is not to go into effect if nationally the skilled trades vote it down, which they did. But the UAW made a ruling that the contract went into effect anyway and therefore violated their own constitution. At that point, Alex and others filed an internal appeal within the procedure of the UAW, where if you feel that the constitution is being violated, you can take your case to what's called the Public Review Board, which is supposed to be an independent board of upstanding community members who will make a decision on whether the international union was right or whether the rank-and-file member who protested the decision they made was right. So they filed an appeal and had a very large number of skilled tradesmen sign on to it. I believe it was over 50, maybe between 50 and 75, put it into the internal procedure and have been waiting now months to hear back on even what the international union felt about the appeal. Finally, they did get a decision, and they did not rule in favor of the rank and file, that is the international. So now it's going to the Public Review Board, and there will be a hearing, and rank-and-file members will be allowed to go to that hearing and express themselves. So we're hoping that they will be able to win for that during that hearing for that decision.
What's the consequence if they're successful? If they do win, what happens?
Well, that will be actually quite complicated. Because the union has ruled that the contract is in effect. So what will they say on that? They might say that they then still have to go back in and try to convince the company to make changes. That could be what happens. Of course, would be a good thing and what they should have done in the first place.
But the moral of the story is you have to fight both internally within an organization, but also, of course, externally against the company if you're going to have a decent workplace.
That is absolutely true. The UAW is, contrary to, its public stance a lot of times, it is internally not democratic. And, you have one candidate run for national office every time there's an election, and you do not have a rank and file vote for the top officers. It happens through the convention system where delegates vote for the top officers at a convention. So we as UAW members do have to not only take on the companies, but take on the union internally, because they've been going along with one concession after another since 1980. And it just show what the whole history shows is that one concession just leads to another. And they take the stance that the company's interests actually are the same as the interests of the unions. You can imagine that they're taking what the company wants more to heart than they are what the workers believe in.
Well, I myself work in printing, which in some ways has some parallels, declining workforce in a different marketplace than what it used to be. So it is a challenge to figure out how to get a union strategy that works when you're facing that concessionary environment and people are kind of put back on their heels by the economy on top of that.
That's right. But people are angry. They may feel they can't do anything about it, but that doesn't stop them from feeling very angry about the situation. And that can lead to explosions and has led to them once people get some hope that unity can be created.
And also find the fights you can win. Whether or not you can win them all, you can win some of them. You got to pick the ones where you've got the leverage and have the resources to make the right thing happen.
Right. So true.
Well, a lot of things we'd like to talk about concerning American Axle. I don't want to, that's a whole story in itself. Maybe we can get back into that in a moment. We have to take another break here and make sure we keep the station on the air so we can talk with more people about free speech in general. And also about free speech for labor. But maybe when we come back, you can give us a brief sense of what happened with American Axle. We'll be back in a few minutes with you, Wendy. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Wendy, for what you're saying, and thanks for asking the great questions. I want to tell our people listening to us to call 877-500-5266. That number is good anywhere in the North American continent. You can also go to kboo.fm, look for the tip jar up at the upper right corner of the homepage, come strolling into 20 Southeast 8th Avenue with your checkbook or a bucket of cash or a credit card, and stroll on back to the back of the station where our money collectors are, and then just sit down and make yourself at home.
That's right, Bill. Come in and make yourself at home with us here. And my name's Jill. I want to thank the other troublemakers that called in. So the other troublemaker prize that Jamie mentioned was claimed by one of three members. So I want to give gratitude out to Elaine, who's a new member in Portland.
Yay,
Elaine. Also to Denise, who's a renewing member in Portland. Yay, Denise. And also, last but not least, to Christine, who's also a renewing member in Portland. Thank you, three. You're probably all honorary troublemakers for calling in during Labor Radio.
At the very least.
Yes.
Yes.
And you can, too, join Lynn, who called earlier, Elaine, Denise, and Christine as troublemakers, whether you live in Portland or the outlying areas. Even in Washington State, we'd love to have you call. 877-500-5266.
Anywhere in the North American continent are the outlying areas.
That is true.
When you're dialing that number. And if you are somewhere like Africa or Asia or Europe or Australia, you know, South America, you can still get a hold of us and give us money at kboo.fm. Go into that tip jar at the upper right-hand corner of our webpage and donate. And it's really, really easy. And there are so many options because we like to say thank you with special gifts for people who donate. Say $120 minimum, like $10 a month if you wanted to do that. You could get, this is special, this is something, a 4-gig audio flash drive that includes recorded talks by Ralph Nader, Helen Caldicott, David Barsamian, Winona LaDuke, Noam Chomsky, and others. But I don't want to take all that much time going through every list, every person. But that's pretty cool because we have some really interesting folks on saying really important stuff. And then another thing that you could get to go along while you're listening is a ceramic mug for a $60 minimum donation. So you can sit with your cup of coffee or water or milk or whatever you like to put in a mug and enjoy the information you're getting and have a great old time.
Thanks, Bill. And you may know that a $120 pledge per year is only 33 cents per day. So that kind of breaks it down for your other daily expenses that you might have out there. Also, for a $100 minimum donation for the entire year, you could get this year's the 2013 Portland Chinook book, the print version.
That's $8.50 a month, by the way.
Oh, say it again?
It's $8.50 a month. It's nothing.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
Bill's breaking it down for me, and I lost track for a sec.
Sorry.
Yes, no, it's okay. I'm new at this, but that's okay. Anyway, please, you're welcome again to give in any method or any way that you're able. So again, if you are in the Portland metro area and either even other places farther away where you might want to be able to take a trip to Portland during our pledge drive, you're welcome to come down here to 20 Southeast 8th in Portland, Oregon. There's many ways to get here, by foot, by bike, you know, many other traditional ways. And again, you can call 877-500-5266 that Bill is so smart to tell us, anywhere in North America you can call. I love that.
Yes, it's
and
true.
Then also online at kboo.fm, we also welcome donations there.
And when you do that, you choose the amount that works for you, which if it's electronic funds transfer could be as small as $5 and as much as you want. You could come in and write a check or mail in a check. That would be also any amount that works for you. And what else? Let me think. If you wanted a gift for your donation, for your joining the KBOO community, and that is truly what it is. It is a community because we are all working together to make a better world. You can choose a gift that really tickles your fancy, like the Portland Chinook book, which is a $60 minimum donation, or the print version, that's the mobile version. The print version is a $100 minimum donation, but once again, whatever works for you, just give us a call, 877-500-5266, walk in, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, or go to kboo.fm. Last phone number.
All right, that number again, 877-500-5266.
And speaking of phone numbers, if you'd like to get the numbers that Wendy gave us earlier to support Brother Alex Wassel, go to that same website, kboo.fm, and you'll find them there with the post of this show. Wendy, can you tell us a little bit about American Axle in the brief time we have left?
Well, you know, American Axle didn't used to exist. It was created when GM sold five of its plants that made axles. And, you know, at that time, and it was 1994, they had approached the union and they said, again, in line with this two-tier wage, trying to get lower wages, they said, anybody who made the parts for the automobile as opposed to assembling them should get a lower wage. And when the union refused to go along with it at that time, they then started selling off parts plants. And we believe that strategy was a strategy that would eventually lead to those workers being paid less. So when the plant was sold, the union really did not fight to stop it from happening because they said that, well, we'll just continue to negotiate the same contract. Well, everybody heard about what happened with that, with the American Axle strike a couple of years ago, because fine. We got the pattern contract for the first couple of contracts, and then they came and they said, well, we want to eliminate wages for everybody. It wasn't just a question of if you were a new hire that you would be paid the low wage. We want the entire workforce to be paid a lower wage because your work is not worth the value of an assembler, and there are other non-union parts plants that make lower wages, so we want you to make the same wages that they make. And that strike did not have to be lost, but the union leadership really was running it just like a traditional strike, where they felt that eventually the company would go along, even though it had all the earmarks of being a union busting situation. So, like, for instance, they made a part for Toyota, the company, and they allowed the company to continue making this part during the strike. Now, true, to have stopped the making of the part would have meant that they would have had to block the trucks from coming out. But it was a strategy that needed to be pursued in order to win that strike. They could have had a sit-down of hundreds of workers in front of those trucks and stopped them from coming out and stopped the part from being made. And then they, with that, I think that could have caused them to win the strike. And there were several other aggressive tactics that they could have used, but they did not pursue that because they felt like this was a traditional strike, evidently. And it's really been devastating. Now the plant's closed.
And that is the future we face if we don't fight. So you've been listening.
Right.
Yeah, you've been listening to Wendy Thompson. As you can tell, she knows a thing or two about being a troublemaker. If you want to know more about that, come out to the Troublemakers School. Tune in to Labor Radio. We want to thank our guest, Wendy Thompson, earlier Adam Sanchez. The engineer tonight is Danielle Parks. For my co-host, Jamie Partridge, and myself, John Walsh, thanks for listening to Labor Radio, and good night.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
The time is 6:59, and you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Southwest Washington Carpenters Local 156, whose goal is to organize workers, provide a safe work environment, ensure livable wages, and elevate the moral and social condition of its members. Information online at ubc156.org. Please stay tuned for Hard Knock Radio.
You are about to cross the border.
This week on A Different Nature, we delve into the program's past and play gems from the record collection of founder Richard Francis. Tune in to A Different Nature, Monday, March 25th from 8 to 10 p.m., and support your community radio station during KBOO's spring membership drive.
Glowing cats, pigs with cystic fibrosis, robo-insects, have you heard about them? What about goat milk made from human genes to stop diarrhea? Join me, Linda Olson-Osterlin, for a membership drive special. Author Emily Anthes will talk about her new book, Frankenstein's Cat, Cuddling Up to Biotech's Brave New Beasts. If you care about animals and our future on this planet, tune in Thursday morning, March 28th at 9:30 for Frankenstein's Cat on A Deeper Look.
Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. It is Hard Knock Radio. And It seems like we have to go to the guardians of history once again. And what am I talking about? All throughout the past couple of years, we've seen the sins of omission, the sins of distortion. We've seen people hijacking sacred cows in our respective histories and reusing them and repackaging them and misleading the masses. And one of the people that has been hijacked is Frederick Douglass. That's right. Frederick Douglass was already under the watch because he was omitted from the movie Lincoln. That was a strike there. But now we have Republicans that, as a talking point, are going around and telling people, if you want to appeal to black folks and if you want to appeal to a larger diversity of people, tell them that you're a Frederick Douglass Republican. And we wanted to get to the bottom of that and set the record straight. What does it really mean to be a Frederick Douglass Republican? Joining us on the show is Blair L. M. Kelly. She is an associate professor at North Carolina State University, a historian, and somebody who had enough. She said enough is enough and set the record straight. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, I saw you on Twitter, and you said enough is enough, said it's time to set the record straight. And you wrote a great piece for The Griot and pretty much put heads to bed when it comes to Frederick Douglass. But for a lot of people, even those who are fans of him, they don't really know this individual. So let's kind of break it down a bit. Frederick Douglass, why is it important that you had to write this article to set the record straight?
Well, as a historian, you're not supposed to have people that you really personally admire. You're supposed to be objective. But a few people have always sort of popped out to me as being incredible people in their time who've made such an impact on their time and ours. And so Frederick Douglass certainly stands out in that pantheon. He was a person who was born into slavery, separated from his mother, as a small child, did not know his father for sure, but believed that he was his white master, worked very hard as a slave, saw brutalities, but still managed to find his way to literacy, to freedom, and eventually to statesmanship in the fight against slavery itself, risking his own freedom for the freedom of others. And so he is one of our foremost people in American history. And so to see him reduced to sort of a political talking point in this context was very disturbing to me.
I started off by saying that Frederick Douglass was already under our watchful eyes for the sins of omission. And it was pretty glaring that in the highly touted movie Lincoln, that he was nowhere to be seen.